Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace and about prosperity. This section is now about European SME policy, and I discuss now about privatization. Privatization is such a wonderful thing. Unfortunately, it is a bit frozen in Europe because some people have badmouthed it and talked very badly about the successes of the 80s and 90s. And now, obviously, we are in a complete mess, and much of the privatization process is frozen. And the result is we have huge and significant state ownership of key industrial sectors in Europe. And that's similar like in China and in Russia, and the European Union is about competing with this kind of economies. And it's very different to the American economic model and the British economic model. And I think we should get a bit better. It's obviously not the same in all countries, and it's a bit complex to study this. But I will now somehow outline some of the most open issues. For example, we have this Airbus conflict with the United States of America. That's the big, you know, like Boeing, it's Airbus. Obviously, they are a big defense contractor. They are a big airline producer and airplane producer. So why exactly is it necessary that this is 25% owned by the German, French and Spanish state? I really don't know why that must be necessary. Yeah? Obviously, it's a bit, you know, when you look at it, Germany hides all this, or it's not hiding artificially, but often the ownership is then in some kind of holding companies, which is owned also by Hamburg City. But, you know, if it's the Hamburg city, or if it's the land Lower Saxony, or if it's the Spanish state, you know, objectively, this is all state ownership. You cannot say it's the private sector just because it's the city of Dortmund owning RWTV, for example. I will talk about it. But why exactly does the public hand, the European state, in its various forms, have to own this kind of big industrial asset? I have made already the case, yeah? It's possible to Europeanize it. That I would see the logic, you know, when it's not possible to sell things because of only the Chinese being interested or only Russian oligarchs. I also don't want things in the hand of the Chinese Communist Party. I also don't want everything to be owned by Russian oligarchs. No. So we can also transfer these things to the European level, because a European Airbus company, like that's a very big European industrial asset, why not to transfer the 25% to the EIB? And then all Europeans would own it, logically, and these countries would have less debt, which is in the case of Spain very relevant, in the case of France very relevant. Germany is better managed, but nevertheless, yeah, it would be then Europeanized. It's one way. That's a compromise. I'm obviously for privatization, because that's a marketable company. That's the 25% of a very successful company. Of course, now today is a crisis in the airline industry, but this will also go over, and then why not sell it as well? Or make a mixed system, 20% to the EIB and 5% over to the equity. There's many ways to do that, but the current status quo, which was inherited by the combination, the merger of the defense industries of Western Europe during the Cold War, why we need to keep everything like it was 50 years ago? I don't get this. So let's come to another very, really shocking example. For example, the biggest car manufacturing company of the world, I think it's the biggest, it's called Volkswagen. Well, everybody knows it, yeah? Why exactly need the German state to own 12% or 11.8% of German Volkswagen? What is the economic rationale of that? Why does the Land Niedersachsen, again, it's a bit complicated in the German case because it's not a very centralized country, there also the state ownership is then decentralized. So the Land Niedersachsen, that's one of the northern states of Germany, and they're like, let's say, like Wyoming, or like New York State, or like Arizona. Like Arizona, yeah, why not? Yeah? So this Niedersachsen, Lower Saxonia, owns 11.8%. And I tell you also why. because the history of Volkswagen obviously is very much connected with Nazi Germany and with the city Wolfsburg, where Niedersachsen is, where basically the city was built for these industrial purposes, for the German war industry in the Nazi Germany. And still today, because somehow this was like that, tragically the history as it was, still today the German land has 12% of the largest global car manufacturer of the world. So can you tell me that historic reasons don't matter? This was once decided by the great Voldemort, and now we have it still going on in 2021 and nobody is questioning it? Yeah, really, yeah. Or let's come to the other historic anomalies. There is, for example, the German industry, energy giant. It is one of the biggest. We are talking here about some of the biggest European companies. We are talking here about some of the biggest global companies in their sectors. Yeah, that's the company called RWE. It's called North Rhine-Westphalian Energy. That's maybe not so well known, but it's a huge company. 50 billion turnover annually, huge assets, a really very important European and in many aspects a global giant. So who owns that company? Obviously, all these companies are also partly owned by BlackRock. You know, but that's the global shareholders of the world, venture capitalists, yeah. Obviously, the left thinks that's really dubious that somebody invests his money in funds. But I think that's a normal thing. People have pooled their money into such vehicles and they invest in such companies. Fine. But who is really owning it? 23% to this moment in 2021, to my best knowledge, is owned by the cities of the region where this was the local municipal utility, it's called in English, that providing of these local services. So the city of Dortmund, if you never heard of Dortmund, no problem. It's a big and nice city and it's beautiful in Western Germany in the area where this Nordrhein, this is basically the western part in the center of Germany, one of the lands. But in that case, it's the municipalities and they have created an association. And together, all this, it's about 7 to 8 cities. If you're interested, it's called VKA Westfalen in Westphalia. It's one part of North Rhine-Westphalia. They own 23% of this huge multinational company. And they are the mayors of cities. You know, they should do urban planning, waste collection, you know. But then, obviously, this is waste collection, urban planning and utility gone mega big. That was the idea that they have a small utility to help to provide services to the people and energy, you know. But with the success of Western Germany, then 70 years of this unstable political system, their small utility has turned a global giant. And now, obviously, it's also stock exchange and it's good company, you know, fantastic, perfect and really cool. But why does German municipalities need to own this kind of asset? Obviously, I'm against selling it to the Russian state, like some Schröderites have already had this great idea and the plan. That's evil. We shouldn't sell it to the Chinese, nor to the Russian state, nor to the oligarchs of Eastern Europe. No, but sell it, please, to normal shareholders on the stock exchange in New York, Frankfurt, London, no matter. And then also, if that's not possible or not required, sell it to the European Investment Bank. Let's make a European utility, which is then really like owned by all Europeans in a sense, and then also partly privatized later on after some restructuring. But why should this Dortmund be a global company? I don't understand the logic of that. I'm sure Dortmund has a lot of apartments to build, roads to fix. Municipalities should do that with their money, not be, I'm a shareholder of global significance, I go to New York, make a road show, and you know, no, that's not the role of the mayor of Dortmund, and all this Hane and all these small places, their claim to fame, suddenly their company got mega big, and that's very dubious in my fears that they continue to keep it. Then let's go to France. Don't worry, I cannot go to all countries in one podcast, but let's go to France because it's also striking. They have You know, about 80 billions of company assets. It's always varying, but they have at least a public, because they are a central state, yeah, they have a central ownership department for their corporate assets. And, you know, Safran, Thales, Renault, Orange, EDF, Engie, Aeronet, ADP, Air France, Airbus, obviously, I said that already. And so on and so on. The biggest, of course, the energy sector. Huge. 20 billion of alone the Electricité de France and also Engie. And I'm not sure that all of the state companies of France are in this kind of, it's called ANP, the Agence de la Participation Nationale or something like the state ownership holding, which is, you know, at least for the sake of transparency, I think in that way, it's this French and the Austrians have a similar model. It's quite good because what we have in all the countries is obviously very complicated. So in Germany, it's the worst, yeah, because Germany doesn't have a state holding for ownership of what the federal ministries and the federal state owns. They do, and here, that's also good. There is a Bundesbeteiligungsreport. The federal parliament requests a report on all the state ownerships. And I'm not against, for example, having some purpose-built utility, some kind of company which is specifically for a public service organized in a private sector entity. That's useful. For example, you have a research entity or you have some kind of economic support agency, they will be a public sector task, no doubt. But let's come to the KfW. The KfW is one of the biggest banks in the world. I'm talking about the world. It's the state-owned bank, the KfW, Kreditanstalt für Wiederaufbau. It's a 100% state-owned company with, okay, the land, and again, they do it with these variations of the various entities. But it's a huge global bank, and they do, of course, development lending, development financing, they do also economic financing in Germany like a normal bank, subsidized, obviously. That's all okay. I have nothing against that. But the thing is, they also have massive ownership in the private sector. Huge! They don't disclose it very well. And so I think what would be really good to have in Germany also a state holding for all the state assets to be well managed from the land, from the industrial sector, from the banking sector, and also have more transparency, similar like they have it in France. And obviously would be good to sell something, because anyhow, we have so much new debt in the corona crisis, 2 years, so much subsidies going out. So we could sell something. In Austria, now the current scandal again, because what is happening when you have so many companies, and let's also discuss why we have them in Austria. Austria was, of course, part of Germany in the Second World War after the Anschluss, and then Germany was forced industrialization of Austria was the task because of the preparations of the Second World War. And so Austria was industrialized with the big steel companies, chemical companies, all the stuff you need for the war. And then this was then in 45 after the breakdown of the Nazi Empire and the Austrian being liberated and occupied. Obviously, the Soviets took a lot of that, but the Western allies left it. And then the question, what to do? Obviously, because Austria was reconstructed, the idea had to be, logically, to nationalize it to Austria, to basically take it away from the German legal status into the Austrian legal status. And so it was basically left ever since. There was a little bit of a phase of privatization under Schüssel, but we own in Austria, because I'm Austrian as well. Just, it's also about 26 billion worth of assets. And it's partly the post office, it's the telecom office, 28%, the Austrian gambling monopoly, 33%, the Austrian state energy sector on the national level, 51%, it's the Austrian North Stream 2 partner, OMV. This is a very important energy company, our oil refinery and basically the biggest company in Austria. And obviously, they are only at 31%. And then it's 100% of the Austrian land and property holding, which is also huge because they own all the public buildings in Austria on the national level. And I'm coming, and that's all in all about, as I see, 26 is currently the status. And what, of course, is happening, who is controlling it? The prime minister. And then he puts all his friends in charge in the industrial holding, but obviously also in the various state companies, which is owned. They are really good jobs. You know, you earn €500,000 at this management on the top level, but you can also find other jobs then for the, as a speaker of the board. You know, if you're politically connected, you work there and you get relatively wealthy. You don't get rich there, but you get quite good. And that's obviously the system. It's called in English jobs for the boys. Yeah? And that's why many people go to politics, not to discuss about policies, but to get relatively secure economically and outperform the other people from the universities who had only the opportunity to work without political connections. Yeah? So we are in this situation in Austria, and that's not good. And it's the historic reason. We have, of course, now all these companies partly privatized. And let's mean that some parts of it is also with American capital and with German capital, basically, and they are in the stock exchange, so they are supposed to be legally good compliance managed, and most of them are, because they are in a way professional. But the public side is always then fully controlled by the political system, and the winner takes it all. If you are prime minister, you control the top jobs, and that's obviously very good as well for party financing and also for your later career. Because after you were the prime minister and you made all these decisions and you appointed your friends, I'm sure they won't forget you later. I mean, politics is insecure business. You never know what happens to you after some 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And then it's always good to be a consultant and to get some contracts, maybe be invited to one of the management boards. And that's obviously very lucrative. So that's the Austrian-German-French issues. There's a huge issue also in Italy. I'm not really very firm on Italian state companies. I would like to refer you to the website. It's called statecapture.eu. This is a Romanian NGO. They have made a study on the four most atrocious and outrageous cases. That's Italy, that's the Czech Republic, that's Romania and Bulgaria. And Bulgaria, Romania, Czech Republic, and Italy, according to all the studies of the OECD, they also made some study, and the EU Commission in 2016 made a study, and obviously they are all neutral towards the ownership of the, it's a public hand, or that's another issue. But these four countries are the worst, together with Slovenia. Slovenia has also another issue, because often these partly state-owned companies, they take massive debts outside of the budget process. That was a bit addressed recently, but obviously what do many of the countries do, and it's also, I think, a good idea to put all the highways and the railways in private company forms, but they're owned 100% by the state, and they do then the financing for the highway building and for the railway building. And obviously in Slovenia, this has reached all over about 60% of GDP, I see in some of the statistics from the IMF. I can hardly believe that. That's quite a lot. It's also connected with the Slovenian banking collapse, because Slovenia had a similar crisis like Greece, but it's less well known. It was not so spectacular, but it was also pretty consequential. There's also, when you see that's contingent liabilities, it's called in economic terms, it's going huge. It was up to 60% in 2016. Also in Sweden, it's quite big. In Poland, when you see the share of the economy, it's in Slovenia up to 12% of the output is controlled by publicly owned, state-owned companies. Yeah? Poland is also 8%, Sweden 8%, Bulgaria 8%, and then it's going below 5% in the case of Croatia and Bulgaria. And Hungary is also quite bad. Yeah? But that's huge. That's the whole GDP organized and produced by publicly owned companies. And also there's other statistics. The Czech Republic is also pretty bad in that one. They have this huge energy giant, ČEZ, obviously. And it's about the same in all countries. The most important are, of course, the railway company, almost everywhere state-owned. Then it's the highway company. That's this funding and building vehicle. That's almost everywhere state-owned. It's a bit different in Italy and France, but in Austria, I'm sure, in Germany, it is just in the beginning. And in most Eastern European countries, to my best knowledge, it's like this. And there is also then the energy sector. And also what is left over from the defense sector, some kind of gambling monopoly, mining monopolies, and obviously always the big forest companies, because that's also, in some ways, it might be relatively good to have some state ownership of a lake or some kind of other protected area, a natural park. Nothing against having a natural park. Could be a foundation, can be the state, you know, all fine. But to have massive land, 10% of Austria owned by the state forest company. And then obviously all the friends of the political world get cheap access to nice rental properties there and so on and so on. Yeah, this is all very dubious in my view. So that's a bit what I have here as data and facts. Yeah. Let's come to the principles as well, because that's also very important. Yeah? First of all, privatization is very good to repay debt. Now we have added, I think, all over. We will see 10% of European GDP possible added during the crisis when the final count comes. That's, I guess, maybe we will reach more. Germany has invested 11%. That's very significant, obviously, for the whole Eurozone. So maybe there will be more. This is not so easy to be repaid like in America, which will grow much further and has a bigger economy and is with higher growth rates already to be expected for 2022. It will be not so easy. So selling some things would be really good. Otherwise, also better to Europeanize it, better to sell it to the EIB, to do debt restructuring on the state level, so that the states like Greece and Italy can do their task of providing decent public services, having a welfare state and invest in the infrastructure, doing the things which state should do. State should not run public companies. That's not the task of member states of the European Union. It's also not very necessary for any state, yeah? This can be all mostly, with some exemptions, like this purpose-built kind of vehicles for research, economic development, some inspection bodies. Yes. Yeah. But not for the big corporations. It's not necessary. It always leads then to collusion. Collusion meaning that the political class and their managing class, they are working together for the benefits of these companies. They're deciding who sits on the boards, who gets the contract, who builds what for which companies. They are working inside the state sector to the detriment of the public, of the private sectors, because they want to create inner state value chains and all these things. Yeah. And it leads also to massive corruption, because then obviously the political world wants to have something back. Their girlfriends must be the secretaries or spokeswoman there, and their sons must be the managers there, and themselves should be on the board later after their political jobs. Yeah? And this is how it works. And that's obviously not very efficient, as we see in the Austrian case and in all other cases. Yeah. Then also it's very much against the SME sector, because the private SME sector cannot really access these state companies. Yeah? They work among themselves, they have their suppliers, they have their political suppliers as well, where they know this owner has a company of a construction company, he does that, I better work with him so I have a good environment in politics. So it works. Or also with the advertisement factor. The advertisement is huge in all the state companies. The railway company is a big advertiser, or the energy company. Then you always can somehow influence the advertisement budget. And that is very significant for the political world, obviously, for the many associations around and also the many publications. Politics needs to reach the people. That's very expensive. So the state companies carry some of the costs. That's, of course, very bad. Additionally, the taxpayers in general are hurt, because the state companies obviously provide less competitive service, work less in the sense that they innovate less, and they also always can be bailed out by the taxpayer. And obviously often their services are a bit more expensive because everybody is somehow has to use their services in these quasi-monopolistic situations where many of them are. And then you have a lack of innovation, because innovation is based on competition. You want to succeed on the market. You're not sure of the future. You have to try something new. But risk is not awarded in the state corporate sector. Stability is rewarded. Yeah? Don't make any risk. Don't make any problems. Yeah? You can stay on. You are part of the family. That's good. Just stay calm. Don't rock the boat. And that's not the risk-taking culture. That's not the innovation culture, obviously. That's jobs for the boys. That's stability first. And that's very bad. And then you have also the whole issue of subsidies, because then obviously the state companies, their output, meaning where the railways are done or where the highways are built or where services centers are provided, it's not according to economic decisions, but it's always, you know, where there is a political need to build that highway, that railway, where is some pressure from the politics and so. That's always then the main consideration of the CEO of such a company, because he thinks, if I do a good job, maybe I will be prime minister. If I can stay a good job, I mean, many of them obviously in France, Austria, many countries, it's like this, that you move from the state corporate sector then into politics. Or other way around. You have been working as the head of a ministerial office, a cabinet, chef de cabinet, and then you are in the German Bundesbahn, like it happened in Germany. Yeah? And this is how it works everywhere. This kind of what the Americans do with the private sector and the public sector in Europe is happening with the state corporate sector and obviously the public sector. And this is all pretty wrong and very costly. And one of the reasons why we are not so dynamic economy, this is the Austrian collusion model. I'm very much, just to make the difference, I'm very much for public-private dialogue. That means to really discuss and have close relation with the private sector and the state to discuss the issues, improve the regulatory environment, have a kind of social partnership, yes. Absolutely. That's the positive Austrian model of a dialogue between all stakeholders and involve them. But when it leads then to the dialogue of the few, where nobody should watch, where everybody else, the broader public, the consumer, the taxpayers, their representatives are excluded or only nominally kind of listened to, but not taken serious. And the real decision happened then between the key executives of the state sector and the public masters in the political offices. And then obviously, then it gets a not so efficient system. The difference between a working public-private dialogue, an Austrian social partnership model, which is in principle very good, and obviously the Austrian corporate collusion and corruption model, is obviously a thin thread to walk. Yeah? And it always depends on the top personality. If the top guy wants to get rich as well or wants to somehow secure his political base mainly, or if he wants really to have a dialogue with everybody in order to have a better public system, that's a big question and it always depends on the prime risk. I already made one podcast about the prime risk, meaning the top political person, if he is in charge or not and who is in charge. Good. That is mostly of the things. And we have to see that all this negative talk about privatization is a big disaster. We have to ask ourselves, do we want to be a kind of Yugoslavian kind of self-managed, controlled economy? Or do we want to be a real market democracy in Europe? And we are still in transition. Honestly, obviously in the Eastern European countries, Central European countries, the transition is just 30 years. And, you know, we have still much to do in that way. The privatization process, obviously, in some ways, there were also murky privatizations. Then this has to be resolved legally. But privatization can be done decently and good. We have stock markets in Europe. We are not at point zero. We have Frankfurt and we have London and we have all the Vienna stock market. Just do IPOs. Sell it to the public. That's very good. Or also make sure that you, if that's no way to do that, then obviously to go to the European level and also avoid that there is a massive Chinese state control system. That's not the idea to replace European state ownership with Chinese state ownership or Russian state ownership, Gazprom. No. That's not good. For certain things which are too big or the market condition is not there, there must be the European Investment Bank for this. And so the states and the municipalities can be released of these assets. They can be better managed centrally in Brussels, Frankfurt, or in Luxembourg, wherever such a holding sits. And then we can do also European-wide infrastructure projects, which are also so important. Build and unify the internal market in energy, infrastructure, railways much better, and so on and so on. I will do a separate podcast about all these Landes holdings and all these municipal holdings. Because additionally, what we do have, and that's a very specific also European phenomenon, I don't know if it's everywhere, but in Austria, Germany, Italy, I know it is, we have huge municipal holdings and huge Landes holding. Because additionally to what I have already mentioned, is that all Austrian land and the regions and the federal systems we have, they have specific Landes holdings, each of them, and they own massive things like ski lifts, gondolas, ski resorts, and obviously then much of the water system, of the canalization system, and so on and so on. Obviously also public companies, much lands, much properties, and so on and so on. Some might be really very good and decent and justified, yeah, like specific companies, but some of the insurances, banks, and what there is, energy companies, infrastructure assets, have to be evaluated if this really well managed. Is not this only there in order to have most of the people with the same family name also having great jobs above the market value and above their competence level for the few who know the governor and are privileged enough to sit around at the right moment when the job is needed or are called for to apply by their political masters after some times in their services in political offices. And so it is, unfortunately, also at the Landesebene. And to some extent, this is obviously also in Vienna the case. And also, I think in many of the situation will be quite similar in many of the member states. And I will use the Austrian example because I know it the best. But I guess what I heard in Italy, in Germany, and in many of the Eastern European countries, there is also significant corruption, collusion on the local and regional level with similar Landes holdings. So I call, in conclusion, and collusion, and please, corruption is the result of collusion, because once you sit so nicely together, you collude so friendly, and then you fix, we can always talk, and we can regulate the interest rates, the prices, the market access, the procurement situation, we can discuss who gets which contracts, among friends. And when you're all on the first name and you are all family, you can so easily then regulate the situation. But the ones who are not in the room or not on the WhatsApp chat, the ones from other parts of Europe, the ones from America, and the ones who are from the other party, and they will simply not know, and they will never apply, and they will never even try to compete. Yeah. And so this collusive system corrodes the market economy and the democracy down to a somehow mixed system. And then you control also some other leverages of the society, like politics and media and the judiciary. And suddenly you are the indisplaceable factor, the network. And then you get very rich and you get very, unfortunately, morally corrupt. And this is, can happen very fast with many because temptations are plenty in such a system. And therefore, this can also not be fixed. It's an illusion that we can vote for somebody else and they will do the better corporate governments, the better system of corporate management, the one person which really does it clean and fine. of course, you know, personalities matter. So some are less interested in money, some are more interested in money, some are really very good personalities and characters, some not. But the basic problem of this kind of aspect of European state capture and European state collusion is that as long as this significant part of the big companies is owned directly by the political class, and they also behave like that because they know they call the shots, they control the boards, they control the procurement, they control the advertisement, they decide. And the managers know that as well and always ask before they do a decision if that's also politically fine, because they know otherwise they won't be reappointed or will be fired at the next term, and there will be always one crisis to come. And if you didn't really behave before, during the crisis your head rolls first, and so it's much better to ask first. And that's the mentality. And so our airports are managed, our railways are managed like that, our energy systems are managed like this, and our highways, I mentioned already, much of the corporate sector is depending on these big contracts. Yeah? Look, if you are a construction company, for whom you want to work? Obviously for the private sector, but for the ones who give construction contract. When you know that in the Austrian situation, obviously, the state is a big contractor for construction projects, the railways, the highways, the state property fund, and the state energy funds. So if you're not on good terms with that sector, you better will not be successful. Same true if you want to clean properties, if you want to service properties, and so on. And then we're talking about a big part of the sector as well. And then you add all the service providers like the lawyers, the accountants, and so on and so on. And suddenly it's not just 5% directly controlled, but 25% indirectly dependent on the state sector. And then it's getting very significant what you vote and what you post on Twitter and how you behave. And then you have controlled societies. And that's exactly what we have in most European countries to a high degree. And we should not do it everything like we have done it, because it's not perfect in the results. The consumers, the taxpayers, the citizens, the people, if you want. I like to call them citizens. I like to call them consumers. I like to call them taxpayers. Not just one mass of people in the street shouting, "We are the people." No, the consumers, the individuals, the taxpayers, the citizens, and they are hurt by such a system, because a few people on the top make the things among themselves, and then it's okay-ish, the system, because we are not poor. It's somehow working. But this kind of, it was of course cutting always every year some part of the potential output in this collusive network. And that's, I think, long-term very negative for our European unification systems, because it erodes the legitimacy and the support of the public. Because by time and by each scandal, and the people think, it's not so good. And then they vote for the crazy populists of the left and the right, and the ones who really want to take down our system because of our inability to reform it and to adopt it and to improve it in the areas where it needs significant improvement. And that's very sad. So I call, guys, let's get going. A bit more openness. Openness is the basis for prosperity. Thanks a lot. And privatize, please, wherever you are. Thanks a lot. Bye.